Good evening, one and all. Yes, a Wednesday, halfway through another week, and this is me, Barry, with another book and a chat. Well, here in Connecticut, yeah, we've still got a bit of snow. Not much, we've still got a bit, but yesterday was a bit nippy, shall I say, with a sort of like winds of about 35 mile an hour and big high wind chill factor. In fact, as the saying goes, winter draws on. It was definitely a bit cold, but it's a bit better today. Not so much wind, a bit of sand and that. And hopefully, you know, the snow's going, and now we've got floods, of course. But apart from that, I'm here. One of the things I was thinking about, I was talking to my family last weekend, and we're sort of talking about how things changed with the COVID. I mean, the whole bit, the way people do work and the way businesses function. I mean, myself, I've sort of been working from home basically for the last 7 years. So all this working from home is nothing new for me. But a lot of businesses are finding a whole new way of working. And I'm sure there's going to be some big buildings that just aren't going to be used anymore. I know myself, we're working from home. I work a lot more hours. You don't have to sort of none of this. Oh, crikey, I've got to leave at 5 sharp because otherwise I hit the traffic, and then you can't be contacted for 45 minutes while you're driving home. And it's, you know, you work in there. You might start early. If something's going on, you hang on late. If somebody else gets a call, you sort of join the meeting, saying, you know, do you need any help and stuff like that. It's just how it works. And I think that's going to be definitely something in the future. But it's not just that sort of way of working. You know, I know it's how you work within the environment. When I first moved over from England 20 odd years ago now, and the very first meeting, and this was a company I'd been working for in England and just moved across the same company to America, I couldn't believe the first meeting I went to. The fact I was sitting there and it was like being surrounded by a whole load of nodding donkeys. That the person doing the meeting was, yeah, and he'll go, yes, yes, yes. The meetings I was raised to in England, you know, these meetings were for people to have their say. Were for not just thinking outside the box, but almost living outside the box, you know, to come up with these ideas. And the whole aspect in America I found, you know, very different and very old-fashioned, should I say. Well, not just old-fashioned in that, it's actually what happens when you work. And my guest today, she went through the sort of work ethics, the business industry, etc., and then suddenly thought, this isn't right, this isn't me. And anyway, we'll speak to her and we'll find out more about this, because on the show today I have the one and only Pat Alva Craker. Hi Pat, how are you doing?
Hey, Barry. Oh, I'm doing great, and it's such a pleasure to be with you here tonight.
It's very good to have you on the show. Texas, is that where you are?
Yes, I am, and I'm in Fort Worth, and we're enjoying a sunny 70-degree day.
Oh, with water?
Well, there you go.
I mean, have you been affected by all what's been going on?
Oh, yeah. It was terrible. It was. You know what, Barry? It was so beautiful, and at the same time, a lot of people suffered because of it.
Right.
The state really wasn't ready.
Yeah.
For this kind of a snowstorm, but it's passed. We have some rain, and now we have some sun, and that's good for us.
There you go. I mean, it's a bit like that in England. You know, if we get more than an inch of snow in the south of England, the whole country stops. They're just not ready for it. I mean, yeah, in the north they have snow all the time. It's just, you know, just how it is. But anyway. What I was saying at the beginning about the whole business of work and stuff like that, I mean, you were an international IT project manager and community leader. It sounds pretty good. No, I'm being an IT person myself. And you, I guess you sort of sipped the company, what's the word I'm looking for? The company juice aid thing. And, you know, were there as in your working clothes, you know, two-piece suit or something like that. But just, that was basically, you didn't realize at the time, but you were being suppressed by all that, living that sort of work ethic.
Yes, I totally agree with you. I work for IBM and Lockheed Martin, which are two male-dominated industries. And yes, when you worked and you started your job with IBM, there was an expectation that you would be wearing the two-piece suit. with hose, nice shoes, your nails were painted, you looked professional all the time, and for a long time, you could not wear pants.
Wow.
Yes, and then you were surrounded. You know, I found myself in many situations surrounded by men, you know, most of the time. And really, it's important to really speak your voice, right?
Yes.
And make sure that you were heard and that people knew what you thought. And so it is an interesting environment because you want to fit in. And in the process of trying to fit in, you lose yourself.
It's
you
funny.
Lose who you are.
You know, it's funny because I was thinking when I was sort of reading about, you know, your book and stuff like that, there's an adage I use on the show sometimes about an author who, this in a way, happened to them. They wrote a book and they went to a seminar, you know, where you could put your book in and they give it a, you know, so and so, this committee or one person or whoever it is gives it a readout, you know, a walk over and goes through it and stuff like that. And they had a guest speaker who also sort of spoke on it. And they were there and they sort of said about this story. It's okay, not sure. Anyway, the guest speakers, you know, stood up and said, well, when you do it in this format, you need to put it in this tent, you need to do this and you should do that. And they said, oh my goodness, you know, they know what they know. Yeah. And they went home and completely rewrote it. Well, about six months later, they went to another one where somebody else said something different. And it went on like this until after about a year and a half of rewrites, there was none of her story basically left.
Yeah.
You know, she the story lost the author's identity, like you're saying, you can lose your identity within a business environment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is so true. And it happens to a lot of women because we want to fit in that world. We watch how men are behaving. In some cases, we actually take on their behavior, trying to speak like them, trying, you know, just really making an effort to fit in. And then in the process, a lot of women, you know, don't advance. There weren't a lot of women that were my mentors, if you will, in higher level positions.
Right. I mean, I know this was what, 35 years or something like that, if I remember reading it right.
Yes.
And that, but now, in your book, Catherine's Quest, One Woman's Journey to Elation, you explain that, you know, how you suddenly basically woke up and started your own trip to find yourself almost.
Yes. I got to a point where I felt like I wasn't honoring all of who I am and wasn't bringing all of who I am into the table. And I said, you know what? I'm tired of not being myself. I'm tired of not really bringing all of who I am. And there was a part of me, which was a very intuitive part of me, that had really been left behind, because in the decision-making process in corporate, you make a lot of decisions based on data.
Yeah.
And being an intuitive person, I, you know, didn't really bring that to the table. So, you know, you and I could, you know, we would be having a conversation and I couldn't say, you know, Barry, you know, my intuition tells me that we ought to go down this path.
Yeah.
Because if you said that, you would lose all credibility.
Yeah, it's like they don't. People make decisions on dollar signs. They don't make decisions on people's experience, on real life, or as you say, on intuition. Prime example. That all this business about offshore, going offshore. I mean, you, from IBM, you should know that. Going offshore, people save millions of dollars. You save millions of dollars, but you lose thousands of people because, to put it bluntly, they can't understand the people on the phone. I mean, I've been on meetings with people from all around the world. And a number of times, the meetings last four times longer because people keep having to ask somebody to say something again. Because they, you know, I mean, and it's not just, you know, like the Asia. I'm talking about everywhere. I mean, we had our European base was in Glasgow in Scotland, and they used to bring me along to translate. You know, it's like, true, but yeah. I mean, people just don't see that. They don't see the the turnover of staff, the loss of experience, all this sort of stuff.
You're right, and then once you lose that that experience and history, it, unless you have a method of capturing their experience, those processes, the ones that are coming behind them have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. I mean, I just, I'm sort of retirement age, and my job was phased out, shall I say, in September. This is another way of, and they got rid of, not just me, a lot of the older, higher people. And it's phased out so that they could bring it back again with another name and bring in younger contractors. But of course, there's no such thing as ageism. Of course, ageism doesn't exist. Nah, of course not. Nah. But they lost in that. They lost the most, like hundreds of years of experience, and they suffered. They suffered. It's just contracts have been lost and all sorts. But people don't see that. Again, it's not staff numbers and the dollar signs on the sheet don't cover into that. And then suddenly they get this thing, we never had this trouble before. Why have we got all the trouble this now? Sort of thing. It's just not on. When was it just a sort of sudden realization like you woke up one morning or just came out of a really nasty meeting and said, this is not what I'm meant to be doing. I've lost myself. I've become a number on the employment sheet.
Mm-hmm. It was two really, I would say three major events that happened in my life that made me pause and say, what am I doing? And one of those was when I learned I had breast cancer. And that was a big pause of, am I really happy with what I'm doing? I'm working, I'm traveling 80% of the time. I now have cancer. Where in the process did I just not take care of myself and just gave everything to the family, to the community, to the company? And here I am faced with this situation. So I don't think I want to travel anymore.
Yeah,
I want to pivot here and start making decisions that are more in support of what I want to do and what makes me happy, and then my husband died of an early age, and I was left running a 200-acre ranch.
Oh my goodness!
And we had an exotic animal ranch, and I brought in a ranch hand at the time. He was in a wheelchair. So that was a challenge in trying to make it all work. And I had a corporate job. And so you have a moment in time where it's like, okay, what are the priorities? I'm at this point now in my life. What needs to shift in order for me to really have a fulfilling and meaningful rest of my life? And it was a wake-up call also at that point. I would have liked to have just turned around and retired just because there was so much that was happening within me that I just really wanted to quit. And I said, no, I'm going to develop a plan. I'm going to work my plan regardless of how I feel. And I'm just going to put in the years that it takes for me to retire and feel financially secure and, meet my financial plan. And as I started getting closer to my retirement, I started feeling a lot more restless. And I had really invested a lot of time in developing myself. And I felt like I was dying on the vine. I felt like I had all the skill set. And the skill set wasn't being taken advantage of.
Right.
I wasn't really able to really use it in my job because they had... you were in this box, as it happens to a lot of us. We get put in this box, and you know how to do this job, and you know how to do it well. And, we want to keep you in that spot. And I'm like, oh, my God, I could do so much more here. But if after a while you say, I've got to be able to take all my gifts and make a contribution in a bigger way, and I'm going to make a plan to really, when I retire, start coaching women.
Right, because you set up this Majestic Leaders Boardroom, is that right?
Yeah, I have Majestic Leaders Boardroom, which is a group program for women presidents and CEOs of their companies, and where I bring them in and we focus on that one thing that they want to get done. What is that one thing you want to get done? And then I teach. I teach leadership skills, communications. I teach marketing. So I teach throughout the time that they're part of the program, so that not only are they growing within, but they're also on the outside, they're completing their projects that are very important to them.
Mm-hmm. That's great. The way you've done this, Catherine's Quest, One Woman's Journey, Two Elation, is in a story style book rather than the sort of, you know, 10 do's and don'ts. And I always think that a lot of people understand that a lot better because they put themselves in that position. Did you set out like you're doing that on purpose?
Yes, it is on purpose. And yes, there are, you know, Catherine has her challenges and similar challenges to what I had. And I teach self-leadership skills, practices that I teach my clients. And my audience are women professional entrepreneurs, and women love stories. They love stories. So I wrapped a parable around all my practices.
Right. That's the way
and
to
so
do
a
it.
Woman,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. And so, really, we all have these situations where we encounter challenges and obstacles. And what the book teaches is that as long as you know how to lead yourself, you're going to be able to come out on the other side a more confident and wiser woman.
Indeed, and more fulfilled, I'd have thought. You know, with empowerment, and in the end, inner peace, confidence. Yeah.
Yes. That inner peace and meaningful life and really redefining success for yourself, because Catherine does get to a point where she questions, you know, what is it that's going to make me happy going forward?
Yeah, what's the thing I remember? I remember, you know, one of these courses you go on about work ethics and stuff like that. Oh, Taylorism. Taylor it was. And there's a time where money doesn't, you want more money, but there's a you get to a tipping point where money doesn't matter against how it affects your life, sort of thing. And this bloke Taylor did a trial back in the sort of 1800s or whatever on it, you know, and people got happier with them, and in the end the money didn't mean anything because their whole life was so affected by the work and stuff, and that's like you're saying, you know, if you can find this self-mastery, this confidence, this peace of mind, and within that, it's like people who work on a job that's their hobby and their passion as well. But you can make your own work environment into that, into you know, what you say, elation, right, as you said.
Into right, and the thing is that it's excuse me.
You want my tea?
Elation is a choice. Living a meaningful life, being in peace is a choice. And this book really amplifies that in our lives, we are always a choice.
Right. And that's what a lot of people don't do, isn't it? They don't realize they've got a choice. Now, whether that's in life or whether it's in marriage or what have you, that people are, you know, too many people are stuck in bad relationships because they're scared what people will think. Or there's a song by the French singer Charles Aznavour. He had a big hit with She, was one of the hits he had. Anyway, he's got a song and it's got this wonderful line in it that I've been using for about 40, 50 years now. That goes, you have to learn to leave the table when love's no longer being served. And I think that's life, and I think that's work. And, you know, if you're not happy with the work, the place you're working, yes, you might think you've got to force there to stay there, and you know, because, oh, crikey, I've got to put bread on the table and stuff like that. But it's affecting you, and it will affect your family in time. You can't. You've got to look at these things. You can't just close your eyes to them.
That is so true, Barry. There comes a tipping point where you will say something has to change because I'm not happy.
Yeah.
And I want to be happy. And it's scary. Many times the decision that we all have to make to be happy is a scary one. And I have to say that it's worth taking the chance because at the end, happiness is, makes everything so much better. You're healthier. You're more passionate. You're more giving. It's just being happy is.
And that's one of the important things, your health, because, the stress and everything like that affects your health, affects your family, people don't realize how far down the life chain these effects can go.
Yes. And the other thing is that you become a role model for your children.
Yes.
When they see that you're going to work, you come back, you're angry, you're bitter, you're not in a good mood, you've settled, and then that's what your children and grandchildren see.
Yeah.
And they think that that's what life should be like.
Indeed. If you've got that place where you look forward to getting up in the morning to go to work, you come home and you talk perhaps about it, or you feel fulfilled at the end of the day. That makes everything, as you say, makes you a better person, makes you a happier person. And because you're a happier person, your children, family, etc., it's better there because it spreads through the family. It does empower not just yourself, but a lot of other people.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, Barry.
So, Catherine's Quest, One Woman's Journey to Elation, celebrates it is to live an empowered life, the healing power of new beginnings, and a reminder that elation is a choice, which we've been saying. It is a choice. It's your choice. What sort of response have you received?
I have heard from women that they have, through the process, they have learned so much about themselves. And they have connected the dots in a way that they have learned that if they learn how to lead themselves, if they learn to live their life through intention and being fully present, they have learned that my life is better. I am a better leader. And I'm more purposeful about my life. So it's just they have pivoted. They become more mindful and happier, and they see how everything connects.
And there is, obviously, over the last sort of 5-10 years, there's definitely an increase in women of a higher level within business. And there's a lot of this understanding of that's coming through with them, that, this is the way. You're not just a number on the balance sheet. You're a person. You have views, you have feelings, you have yourself. And you believe in yourself, and make it a, whether it's just being empowering yourself and others or what. But there is definitely an increase in how the work environment is resolving around, especially for women. Is this something you've seen an increase of from your side, from with your book and with your training?
Absolutely, I have seen that change, and. Women are great negotiators, and they play win-win, and they are very intuitive. And so when they start connecting and trusting themselves, their level of confidence increases. They are examples of what it is to just be yourself in the work environment, which gives permission to everybody else to be themselves.
Yeah, I've met people who try and be what they're not, and because they think that's how it's meant to be, and that's how their managers or what have you, it try to shape them in the manager's mold, and it's right. You can't be what you're not. whether it's in work, whether it's in life, romance, what have you. And it's great that, you know, people are finally starting to realize this with, you know, books like your great one here.
Yes, absolutely. And in this book, as women read the book, there are exercises, there are questions that invite the women to really sit back and reflect on their lives. I teach self-care principles, which you and I just talked about, how important it is to take care of your health and how to live in the present and really go within for your answers. All these practices are all in the book.
Great. Well, what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you, Pat, so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you, more about your book, and more about, of course, the Majestic Leaders Boardroom.
Yay, thank you. So my website is majesticcoachinggroup.com. When you visit my website, there is a tab for Catherine's Quest, and you can buy the book along with the journal and affirmation cards and buy it as a bundle for yourself and for other women leaders in your life. I also have, I'm also on LinkedIn and on Facebook under Majestic Coaching Group. And my offer for your audience is that they can go to majesticcoachinggroup.com and they can schedule a strategy call where I will take them through some of the practices that are in the book and help them apply them in their business and in their life.
That's great. Very kind of you. Thank you. Well, Pat, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been fascinating chatting to you. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Me too.
Well, there you go. My guest today, Pat Alva hyphen Kraker. So that's Alva hyphen Kraker. Pat Alva hyphen Kraker. And as you said, you can find out more about her and your book and also the Majestic Coaching Group at majesticcoachinggroup.com. All one word, majesticcoachinggroup.com. That's two C's, majesticcoachinggroup.com. Well, that's it for now. That's it for this week. Of course, I'll be back on Sunday with my double music hat. Between 5 and 6, we have Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century. And we'd finished with my picks for my birthday month, February. So we're now on to back to themes. And it's religion or church or what have bells or stuff like that for this Sunday on that. And then after that, from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, we have the Swinging 60s, an hour of music from the 60s. And then, of course, next Tuesday, Wednesday, back with a couple more chats. Well, that just leaves us one thing left to say. Don't forget.